Since the time of the great flood, in the days of Noah, there has never been a nation like America. Never in all of human history has a kingdom arisen with such power, wealth, and influence as the United States. Within 200 years from the day of its founding, America ascended to the summit of supremacy, towering above every other nation on earth, with a military armament twice that of all other nations combined, and an economy that controlled the world. Was America's incredible rise to supremacy merely coincidental? Was it providential? One thing is for certain. This land of the plumed serpent was chosen long ago to be the trestle board of an ancient plan. The key that unlocks the mystery of America's secret destiny is a name, Francis Bacon. Sir Francis Bacon, without a doubt, is one of the most enigmatic personalities of the modern era. Born in London at the height of the English Renaissance on the 22nd of January, 1561, Bacon would himself become a Renaissance man of the highest caliber. Before his death on the 9th of April, 1626, this one man within 65 years would literally define the methods of modern science, as well as the parlance of modern English. But perhaps most significantly of all, he would chart the very destiny of what was to become the United States of America. Aside from his many exploits in science, philosophy, and literature, Bacon was a powerful statesman and parliamentarian, holding many titles during his illustrious career, including Attorney General, Lord Chancellor of England, Viscount of St. Alban, and Baron of Verulam, among others. He was also a favored courtier and close advisor of both Queen Elizabeth and her successor, King James. Dubbed the father of modern science, Francis Bacon has been hailed by many, including Thomas Jefferson, as one of the most influential men in all of human history. But behind the public veneer of this brilliant man lie dark and demonic shadows. Ironically, Francis Bacon is widely considered within the academic community to be the archetype of empiricism and practical thinking. And yet, if truth be told, this father of modern science can also be rightly considered the father of modern esotericism. It was most likely Bacon who coined the phrase, "Knowledge is power." But what escapes those who employ this axiom is that the knowledge which Bacon valued most was not empirical knowledge, as they suppose, but rather esoteric knowledge. In other words, secret knowledge is the source of true power. It is no wonder, then, that Bacon himself claimed to be in possession of such secret knowledge, which he attained by his own admission through intercourse with demons. Among his many affiliations with the occult, Francis Bacon was a master Kabbalist. Kabbalah is the Jewish branch of the ancient mystery schools, and like the other branches, its prime objective is the perfection and deification of man. In a word, Luciferianism. For Bacon, the empirical material sciences were merely facilitators of the greater esoteric metaphysical sciences through which secret knowledge could be attained via contact with superior spiritual beings residing outside of the physical plane, beings through whom he claimed to have received the inspiration of his life's work. In order to veil this intercourse with demons from the vigilant eyes of the Roman Catholic Church and political adversaries, he concealed his occultic practices within the sanctum of secret societies, most notably the shadowy brotherhood of the Rose and Cross, the Rosicrucians, of whom Bacon was chief. In fact, there is reason to believe that Francis Bacon was the protege of notorious wizard Dr. John Dee, who was a close friend and advisor to Queen Elizabeth and the deviser of a new brand of sorcery he called Enochian Angel magic. Aside from being a sorcerer, Dee was a respected mathematician and astronomer, as well as a leading expert in navigation who trained many of the explorers that would conduct England's voyages of discovery. Dee was also a prominent figure within the Order of the Rose and Cross, and was most likely the Order's Grand Master, before passing the torch to Bacon. There are many peculiar stories surrounding the lives and times of both John Dee and Francis Bacon, which are in themselves highly intriguing. But what is most relevant to this analysis was their shared conviction that the legendary empire of Atlantis would rise again in the very land that is now called the United States of America. Dee and Bacon not only shared this conviction, but also labored under the guidance of non-human intelligences to make it so. Before his death in 1626, Bacon wrote a bizarre novel entitled New Atlantis. The book would not be published until 1627 by Bacon's personal secretary, William Raleigh, and never in its entirety. The traditional story holds that Francis Bacon was unable to finish the novel before his death, but many of the initiated brethren believed differently, including Manly P. Hall. The New Atlantis was first published in 1627 as a kind of appendix to the Silva Savarum, a natural history in 10 centuries. On the title page is a curious design. It shows the figure of an ancient creature representing time, drawing a female figure from a dark cavern. The meaning is obvious. Through time, the hidden truth shall be revealed. This figure is one of the most famous of the seals or symbols of the Order of the Quest. Contained within it is the whole promise of the resurrection of man and the restitution of the divine theology. It is well known among the secret societies of Europe that the second part of the New Atlantis exists. It includes a description of the great room in Solomon's house, wherein are displayed the crests and the coats of arms of the governors of the Philosophic Empire. It may be for this reason that the writings were suppressed, for these crests and arms belong to real persons who might have been subjected to persecution, as Sir Walter Raleigh was, if their association with the secret order had been openly announced. The New Atlantis is a fictional narrative, but with a non-fictional plot, that may have served as the codex, the very blueprint, for the formulation of the government of the United States of America, and the esoteric organization that would control it from behind the scenes. In many ways, the New Atlantis is a manifesto of the secret society, a public confession, though concealed in a parlance perceived only by the initiated, concerning the construction of a utopian Christian society that would be ruled by a pagan philosophic priesthood, a priesthood dedicated to the doctrine and execution of the Luciferian agenda. The following is a brief summation of the New Atlantis. The story begins with a group of seafaring Europeans who set out on a voyage from the shores of Peru, but after being swept up in wayward winds, are driven far from their intended destination to the shores of an uncharted and mysterious island, whose name, they are told, is Bensalem, or Son of Peace in Hebrew. The seafarers soon discover that Bensalem is a utopian Christian society governed by an order of philosophic priests called the Society of Solomon's House, which house or college, my good brethren, is the very eye of the kingdom. After a lengthy tale of how Bensalem came to be a Christian nation, involving an ark as an Ark of the Covenant, the Apostle Bartholomew, the Bible, along with some extra-biblical texts, and the apostolic sign of tongues, the European strangers are briefed about the old world, the time when Atlantis reigned supreme, and the civilizations of the earth were higher and nobler, possessing secret knowledge and advanced technology. It is revealed to them that Atlantis was what they knew as America, and that there were also great and mighty kingdoms in Mexico and Peru associated with Atlantis. Finally, after much fanfare regarding the chaste and pious society of Bensalem, one of the Europeans is afforded a rare audience with an esteemed father of Solomon's house, whose pomp and regality is described in great detail. What follows is a comprehensive briefing of the many technological wonders of Bensalem. Remarkably, the technologies listed on the final pages of Francis Bacon's early 17th century work read like a prophetic forecast of things to come. They include, but are not limited to, deep underground facilities 3 miles down, skyscrapers half a mile high, wind and water turbines, artificial atmospheric devices, electrical devices, genetic labs, industrial manufacturing, lasers, powerful telescopes, spectacles for the eyes, magnifying glasses, audio amplification, including headphones, advanced firearms and missiles, flying machines, submarines, and holographic projections. After being briefed on the technological wonders of Bensalem, as well as the function of some of the secret agents of Solomon's house, a very telling admission is made. And this we do also. We have consultations. Which of the inventions and experiences which we have discovered shall be published, and which not? And take all an oath of secrecy for the concealing of those which we think fit to keep secret, though some of those we do reveal some time to the state, and some not. What Bacon's New Atlantis truly depicts is a pseudo-Christian society governed by Rosicrucians. In fact, later editions of the book included the subtitle, The Land of the Rosicrucians. The entire narrative of the New Atlantis is replete with Christian jargon, mingled with the language of the mystery schools. This mixture of Christianity with the mysteries is the calling card of the Order of the Rose and Cross, and subsequently of every secret society that has branched out of them, including the Masonic Order. The very emblem of the Rosicrucians, the Rosy Cross, is a flagrant declaration of both their objective and their mode of operation. The cross, usually positioned behind or beneath the rose, represents Christianity. However, the rose, in its varying configurations, signifies the mystery religion. The mystery religion, kept secret by the serpents, the sons of the dragon, since the days of Babylon, and revealed only to the elite among the initiated, is nothing more than the doctrine of Lucifer, combined with the forbidden knowledge of the fallen watchers, first disclosed to their wives and offspring in the pre-flood age. The teachings of this arcane knowledge have since been divided and compartmentalized among the many mystery schools around the earth, including the secret societies of the West. Through the blending of Christianity with the mystery religion, acolytes of the mystery schools, shrouded in a veneer of Christian piety, could operate in secret and without fear of persecution. Also, by infiltrating the hierarchies of Christian institutions, the whole sway of Christian doctrine, practice, thought, and culture could be manipulated and eventually controlled by Luciferian handlers. The idea of a new Atlantis did not begin with Bacon's book. Since the destruction of the old Atlantis in the age before the great flood of Noah, there has ever been a secret plan to reinstitute the old world order in which the gods mingled themselves with the seed of men and their hybrid offspring ruled the earth. As explained in the previous episode of this series, Atlantis symbolizes this old world order. Thus, the building of a new Atlantis is the inaugural procedure for the inception of a new world order in which the gods return. The adepts in the higher degrees of the mystery schools, both past and present, have always understood this occult principle and have ever been laboring since the beginning to bring about its accomplishment. In his book, The Secret Destiny of America, late Masonic philosopher Manly P. Hall makes it abundantly clear that America was chosen long ago as the site for the rebuilding of Atlantis and the reinstitution of the old world order under the guise of universal democracy, the new world order. Believing this to be so, I dedicate this book to the proposition that American democracy is part of a universal plan. Thousands of years ago, in Egypt, the mystical orders were aware of the existence of the Western Hemisphere and the great continent which we call America. The bold resolution was made that this Western continent should become the site of the philosophic empire. One of the most ancient of man's constructive ideals is the dream of a universal democracy and a cooperation of all nations in a commonwealth of states. The mechanism for the accomplishment of this ideal was set into motion in the ancient temples of Greece, Egypt, and India. So brilliant was the plan, and so well was it administrated, that it has survived to our time and will continue to function until the great work is accomplished. As Hall indicates, the discovery and colonization of America did not happen by chance. It was part of an ancient plan to build a philosophic empire, a new Atlantis, a plan whose time had come to fruition in the 17th century and whose agents of implementation would be the Rosicrucians under the direction of Francis Bacon. It is well known that Bacon, along with his influential fraternal brothers, directed much of the colonization of America, as Hall confirms. Bacon quickly realized that here in the New World was the proper environment for the accomplishment of his great dream, the establishment of the philosophic empire. It must be remembered that Bacon did not play a lone hand. He was the head of a secret society, including in its membership the most brilliant intellectuals of his day. All these men were bound together by a common oath to labor in the cause of world democracy. Bacon's Society of the Unknown Philosophers included men of high rank and broad influence. Together with Bacon, they devised a colonization scheme. This colonization scheme of Bacon's included capturing one of the most coveted occultic locations on the planet, the 77th meridian west, known as God's Longitude, upon which Washington, D.C. would later be constructed. It was most likely fellow Rosicrucian and subordinate in the order to Bacon, Sir Walter Raleigh, who accomplished this task. When once the east coast of America had been thoroughly scouted by Bacon's men, and the important location secured, Rosicrucian and later Masonic agents were sent in earnest to begin the colonization of the New World. Bacon's secret society was set up in America before the middle of the 17th century. He made sure that the American colonists were thoroughly indoctrinated with the principles of religious tolerance, political democracy, and social equality. The alchemists, Kabbalists, mystics, and Rosicrucians were the incisive instruments of Bacon's plan. Representatives of these groups migrated to the colonies at an early date and set up their organizations in suitable places. But perhaps what Bacon did not anticipate was that another colonization scheme was at work, one that was being directed by the providential hand of God himself. Freed from the iron grip of the Roman Catholic Church after the Protestant Reformation, and unwilling to bow to the corrupt and tyrannical Church of England, a group of Puritan separatists led by William Bradford boarded the Mayflower in September of 1620 and set out for America. These were truly courageous and pious souls, and genuine Christians adhering to biblical doctrine. When once the pilgrims reached the shores of Cape Cod, after a long and treacherous voyage, they disembarked and fell on their faces before God, making with him a covenant for themselves and their posterity. Thus, the duality in our country began. On the one hand, Rosicrucians, Masons, alchemists, Kabbalists, and mystics were coming to America to carry out the ancient Luciferian plan and build the new Atlantis, while on the other, True biblical Christians were building godly communities and living in accordance to the teachings of the apostolic fathers. But the influx and influence of the secret societies could not be abated, and before long, the course of the colony's future was being plotted in Masonic lodges. Even the Revolutionary War that would lead to America's independence was guided by the Brethren of the Mystery Schools, as Tom Horn affirms in his book, Zenith, 2016. That a Rosicrucian Masonic Brotherhood was involved in the American and French as well as European revolutions is indisputable today. As many as 44, though probably a lower number, of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons. After the colonists had won their battle for independence, and the United States of America was born, the scope and success of Francis Bacon's colonization scheme would be showcased in the building of Washington, D.C., capital of the new Atlantis. There is perhaps no greater evidence that many of America's founders were initiates of the mystery schools than the layout, architecture, and artwork displayed in the pagan monuments of Washington, D.C. Furthermore, as if to leave a token of their intentions, the Great Seal of the United States was designed to symbolize the work they had begun, but not finished. There is a legend that in the lost Atlantis stood a great university, in which originated most of the arts and sciences of the present race. The university was in the form of an immense pyramid with many galleries and corridors, and on the top was an observatory for the study of the stars. This temple to the sciences in the old Atlantis is shadowed forth in the seal of the new Atlantis. Was it the Society of the Unknown Philosophers, who scaled the new nation with the eternal emblems, that all the nations might know the purpose for which the new country had been founded? Benjamin Franklin was the chief representative of the mystery schools in America, and the primary orchestrator of the plan that Bacon had set into motion so many years before. I could spend a long time detailing Franklin's involvement with the occult and his unparalleled influence in both the Revolutionary War and the formulation of the government that preceded it, but I will abstain for brevity's sake. Suffice it to say, Benjamin Franklin, like his forerunner Francis Bacon, was engaged in intercourse with demons, and very possibly guided by the agents of the antediluvian world as he labored to build the new Atlantis. Franklin spoke for the Order of the Quest, and most of the men who worked with him in the early days of the American Revolution were also members. The plan was working out. The new Atlantis was coming into being in accordance with the program laid down by Francis Bacon 150 years earlier. The rise of American democracy was necessary to a world program. At the appointed hour, the freedom of man was publicly declared. Democracy is the banner beneath which the Luciferian agenda marches. The doctrine of Lucifer is one of enlightenment and apotheosis. It teaches that through knowledge, man can perfect himself and become like God. Luciferians believe that they are embracing the light, and indeed they are. But it is a light that leads to everlasting darkness. They seek to liberate humanity from the human condition, and yet reject utterly its singular rectification in the Lord Jesus Christ. But above all, they endeavor to reinstitute the golden age and enthrone their own philosopher king, their Bensalem, the son of peace, who the Bible identifies with a different title, the son of perdition. Some Luciferians are overtly wicked, knowing full well with whom they have aligned themselves and against whom. However, the majority of Luciferians sincerely believe that they are members of a philosophic priesthood dedicated to the liberty of mankind. Such were many of the founding fathers of the United States of America. What they fail to realize is that the true nature of Luciferian enlightenment is liberty from the law of God and the dominion of His Anointed One. This kind of freedom is vividly illustrated in the second psalm. Why do the nations rage and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His Anointed, saying, "Let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us." I believe that the intentions of many of the founding fathers were noble and praiseworthy. But because of the influence of the occult, a Faustian bargain was made. The seeds of liberty that were sown into the blood-soaked soil of America were derived from the fruit of a Luciferian tree. They would indeed grant the benefits of enlightenment, religious tolerance, political democracy, social equality, and prosperity for a while. But when this tree was grown to full maturity, the fruits of its freedom would flower, and the true nature of its origin would be seen. Licentiousness, sexual depravity, pride, corruption, and every form of immorality, the fruits of liberty from the law of God. It is now apparent, nearly 400 years after Francis Bacon initiated his colonization scheme, that the new Atlantis has been successfully constructed according to the blueprint set forth in his book. America was designed to be a Christian nation on paper, but in practice it would be governed from behind the curtains by a pagan society of Solomon's House. Writer and filmmaker Christian J. Pinto elucidates. Bacon's New Atlantis has also been called the Land of the Rosicrucians, and that is exactly what America has become, thanks to the secret societies. The rise of paganism in our country is no accident. It was planned from the beginning. But what is the end game for the new Atlantis? What is the prime objective? I believe it is this: to open the gates to the gods of the old Atlantis and reinstate the antediluvian old world order, the hybrid age, when the gods mingled with men. This occult plan for America, according to Madame Blavatsky, is cryptically referenced in one of the stanzas from an ancient Tibetan manuscript called the Book of Dizian. The serpents who redescended, who made peace with the fifth race, who taught and instructed it. Occultic philosophy teaches that even now, under our very eyes, the new race and races are preparing to be formed, and that it is in America that the transformation will take place, and has already silently commenced. Is it possible that the founding of the United States of America has been guided by the same plumed serpent entities that, according to tradition, founded the Maya, Aztec, and Inca civilizations? Like our own nation, these kingdoms flourished with enlightenment and knowledge, until they descended into a bloodbath of paganism, despotism, and moral depravity. The serpent godmen that established these civilizations were said to have taught Christian values and are even depicted in some instances with the symbol of the cross on their garments, in their hands, and even hoisted on their backs, as in Quetzalcoatl's case. Are we, as a nation, being guided even now by the exiles of the old Atlantis to prepare the way for the coming of their progenitors in the new Atlantis? I cannot say for certain, but I do know this: the enlightenment and knowledge of Lucifer's light will always lead to death and eternal darkness. There is no political, philosophical, or spiritual concept that can deliver the human race from its wretched condition of sin and death. True enlightenment does not come from Greek philosophers, scientific discoveries, or contact with superior beings. True enlightenment is faith in the Son of God. I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life.